The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on September 3, 2023. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning, everybody. Good to see you this morning on this Labor Day weekend. Glad you could make it. Well, I've had a little bit of time to review some of the notes and letters and questions and things that have come to me these last couple of weeks. And I started to notice, I don't know if I ever really noted it before, but I wouldn't call it a theme in various notes that I get, letters, questions, whatever, written out or typed out or whatever. Anyway, well, one thing that was occurring is somewhat there in the background, perhaps sometimes it's very much in the foreground, but kind of a misunderstanding of the teaching that I offer, and but also I think a misunderstanding of what the awakened see and how they teach and what they're pointing out. This is that when we refer to this world of emptiness, say, and there's still kind of a background assumption running, I think, for many people that not really fully understanding this term emptiness, perhaps, maybe lingering ideas about maybe nothingness or something like that, which is not all the case with emptiness. Shunyata is the Sanskrit term that Nagarjuna used. So it enters into the kind of questions, or at times they'll say something like, of me, they'll say that, well, since you don't believe in anything, or something like that, or since it's all an illusion, then what difference does it make, you know, if I do this or if I do that? And these kinds of questions are, they're still clinging to a dualistic understanding of the world and of our lives and what is taking place here. And it can be very subtle, as it is in the case of a number of these questions that I've gotten. But also, like I say, it's sort of like in the background, it comes through, not in all the stuff I receive, but in much of it's there. So I just wanted to say, and I can't really address it directly so much. Sometimes I do if there's an opportunity for it, when I'm responding, but I think I want to just say something about that in a very general way, because I suspect many of you here too, or listening on in Zoom, might also be picking things up in this way, in kind of a dualistic way, or an assumption of, well, if we talk about this world as opposed to that world, that this world is better than that world, or this kind of thinking enters into the background there. Or if it's all just nothing, you know, what difference? Or if it's all an illusion, what difference does it make, you know? And you still have certainly at least one foot, if not both feet, in this world of duality. And the teachings aren't really written this way, if we have the true teachings. There's all sorts of teachings that might not be written by those who are awake that we have available to us. But when you encounter a true Dharma statement, it's not dualistic. And I thought maybe I could just use one simple example from a verse that, particularly those of us who sit sesshins, I believe, if I remember now, we recite it after each meal, I think. But, and on other occasions too, but it's one I just dearly love. I'll recite it now. Most of you, I think, will know this. And I thought maybe we could just look at that the way the awakened are speaking of it and see if maybe we're missing something with our ordinary understanding of how things are. And that would be this little verse. In this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. Nothing surpasses the boundless mind. Thus we bow to Buddha. I don't think I'll be able to get through all of this, but maybe at least the first line. just looking at it very carefully. And what is there? What is it the awakened, the enlightened, how do they view this? How do they see this? How do they understand? How does this come from their lips? What is the understanding here? The full, complete understanding of it. Because we're probably not, as I certainly wasn't for many years, fully aware of what I could, on the surface of it, even right away, it sounded beautiful. I liked it. But the depth, I don't even know if the depth is the word, but the full understanding of what it is that the awakened see to express something like this was certainly lacking in my mind for the longest time. And I think it's that way for many of us. And we might not, because we do have some understanding, as I had some understanding of this, I thought I kind of understood what it meant. And it obscures the fact that, no, there's subtleties in this that we're probably missing. And I certainly won't be able to bring them all out here. But just in taking a look at this, in this world of emptiness, already in that word, in, there's a big clue as to what we're discussing here. And again, like I was saying, some of the confusion I could kind of glean from just the coming out of the kinds of questions that I've received over the years, it's just kind of a not an appreciation for the non-duality that is being expressed, even though it's not being expressed, even in that first word. It's not overtly being expressed in that first word, in. As soon as you say in, now the awakened would be fully aware of this in saying in. Why would they say in? Because isn't that implied then there's also an out or something? Yeah. Of course, then we have teachings that help with this, like the enlightenment statement of Sansang, the third patriarch of Zen in China, author of the Xinjing Ming. And for him, his enlightenment, what he said to his teacher upon awakening, is, he said, no inside, no outside, no in between. He's speaking directly out of a direct realization of reality, of what is taking place here. He's not talking about something in particular. Because if you do that, well, now there's an inside and an outside and quite possibly an in-between. But he's saying no inside, no outside, no in-between. So there's inside and there's outside. What else? There's no in-between either. And is there anything left? So this is his realization of this. And he spoke it in those terms to his teacher. But what exactly is going on there? Do we spot that then when we encounter a verse, a lovely verse like, in this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus? And probably not quite catching that. But to those who are awake, they immediately realize we're talking about the world of appearances, the dualistic world, the world of coming and going, of this and that, birth and death, and all of that, our ordinary understanding of reality. Speaking of, already in that first word, in, because with a full realization of reality in totality, in doesn't really refer to anything. There's no inside, no outside, no in between. By the way, I don't know if I wasn't going to do this, but that might seem like, well, that's crazy, that's impossible. But actually, we even have images of this that are mathematically generated, and something that was caught the imagination of many back in the 80s and 90s, probably the 80s, I suppose, the Mandelbrot set, which has, well, it appears to have an inside and it appears to have an outside. But if you look very carefully and try to find where the inside and the outside are, they begin to entwirl and entangle and dance around each other. And you can just keep going in and in and in, looking for the boundary, the in-between, and you won't find it. It's infinitely complex. And yet, there you have it. And mathematically, it can be generated on a computer screen. Many of you, I'm sure, have seen this. I'm only saying this because you might think, well, yeah, but there's nothing like that. Well, here we have examples right there of something that appears that way. But to the awakened, everything appears this way. No inside, no outside, no in between. So when a verse like that from the awakened mind, it says, in this world of emptiness, already in indicating that we're speaking of the relative world, the world of you and me, birth and death, this and that, longing and loathing, and all of that. We're speaking of this world, and of course that's the world we seem to be living in, that we believe we're living in if we stop to think about it a bit. You know, the world of this and that, the world of you and me. There's me and it's really kind of me and everything else. That really fundamental basic duality, the subject and the object, a mark of consciousness right there. So in saying in already in this world of emptiness, but then backing that up immediately within, implying that we're in this world of this and that, for most of it, unless we're awake, we take this world of this and that, you and me, here I am, now what should I do about this? What are these teachings telling me to do? They're not telling you to do anything other than wake up. Notice what we have here. It's really all these teachings do in the end. What this practice is about is learning to pay very careful attention. And not so much as to what's going on, because you'll never capture that. You don't need to, but you do see it. Well, what you can start to do is to notice how you yourself, first of all, are formed as me, separate and apart from other stuff, people and stuff, thoughts, feelings, ideas, beliefs, any number of things. And all the entanglements that get embroiled in that. But what they awaken, what they realize about this is that this world is empty, or it is, I like to use the term, lately I've been using it anyway, I'm starting to wonder if, anyway, there's no real term for this, but I have used the word non-substantial. This world of appearances, because it looks like coming and going, it looks like this and that, you and me, here I am and everything else and all of that. It looks like that, feels like that, sounds like that, tastes like that, whatever the different experiences we might have in this world. But the very fact that we're saying in, first of all, it implies, so here I am and all of that. And then in this world, so there's this world then. And as I said, most of the time, we're not aware of that breakage of that duality, and using that word in, or breaking into duality using that word. And this is just the world. This is just how it is, how it's always been. You know, it's the way I understand it. It's the way I see it or think of it, how other people talk to me about it, and I can exchange ideas with them regarding this, the fact that we all have this assumption, so we can actually seem to communicate. Even though, of course, your take on whatever it might be will be different than the next person. And sometimes we can catch that. Sometimes we're talking as if we really think we're talking about the same thing. And seems like we're communicating. But this is a world of entanglements. It's a world of confusion, really. And perhaps we're not really appreciating the fact that, you know, you haven't really gotten a hold of anything here. And as to what is this place anyway? What is taking place here? The moment we speak of in and we're caught by that and we think that we can be in or that we are in a world like this, well, now we're not going to understand. It's just an ordinary understanding and it'll remain that way. We might use that, then we get engaged in some of these teachings of the awakened, and we, without ever doubting where we're coming from with this, our ordinary mind, we'll start investigating those. Maybe pulling them apart and trying to figure out this, okay, so this is the right way here and that's not so good. Thinking that the teachings are laid out in that way. But that's just our ordinary mind, our ordinary consciousness at work. The awakened don't think that that's what they're doing. Well, they don't really think, or they don't really have a notion about doing something in the first place. All of that is dualistic, but they see that. But in this world, but then it says, in this world of emptiness. So immediately, the awakened just put that in there. This world of emptiness, that these things that are appearing here are empty of any kind of substantiality. They appear substantial. They appear to be coming and going. They appear to form and change and grow and die and whatever else. That's what the world of appearances is. But that's what it is, the world of appearances. And the awakened see this. But this is what appears to be then our everyday life, our everyday world. And most of us never doubt that. When we encounter a teaching like in this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus, we'll approach it with that ordinary kind of understanding and really not appreciate what it is that's being pointed out. Gradually or eventually, maybe we will. But of course, it won't be you that does that. I say we will, the we, the I. What is seen through finally is that isn't capturing anything at all. But in seeing this, in realizing this, then there's great freedom. Freedom from the lack of, or freedom from confusion. Confusion has dropped away. And we can actually, you know, see the true nature of what is taking place here. It is not nothing, certainly. Obviously, it is not nothing. Because here it is, coming and going. And then we can say, as one young man wrote to me, well, if this is all an illusion, then what difference does it make if I do this or as opposed to that? You know? And essentially, that was what he was asking. Well, because the world of appearances will continue on as the world of appearances. And it would seem, taking this route, that this will seem to follow from it, or something like that. These appearances will still continue. Well, then is that any more real, or what difference does that make? I mean, we can endlessly ask these questions. But at some point, it'd be helpful for us if we just stop and realize this. This is, when we say, in this world is it any different than suffering or pain or pleasure? But is it something other than that? At this point, if we can see the nature of the lack of substantiality in the various things that are taking place here that seem to be coming, including myself, for each of us, you know, me, that angle on, that view of it all, we realize that this is nonsense. There's nothing there that you can ever get hold of that's actually capturing this or experiencing this. you know, the experiencer, the thinker, the feeler, whatever, you know, you'll notice that that's missing in the actual immediate direct experience. So all of this is being indicated just in that first line. So in, implying now we have the world of this and that, in this world of appearances of coming and going, now may we exist in this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water. So it would appear like we are here too, I am here in this world of coming and going. And now the expression is that in seeing and realizing that this is emptiness, that we can't really get hold of this muddy world, can't get hold of the enlightened world either, or the world of totality, or whatever. You can't get hold of any of this. But we can realize its nature. So this is what it's saying, is that may we exist, or exist would be persist. That's also true, like in this world of emptiness, in emptiness indicating that this is a world of the illusory appearances of this and that. And with this, then we also have this sense of existence, that there is something here that's persisting from moment to moment, and particularly when it comes to me, that I persist, you know, but also other things as well. But all of this is being pointed to with the recognition that we are in this world. It appears that we are in this world to the extent that we appear in this world. It is likened to muddy water. It's disturbed, it's agitated, it's dirty, I guess we could say. It's not pure. But may we exist, may we appear to persist here in this world with purity, like a lotus. This image that was used in the East, in Buddhist time, the image of a lotus flower. Characteristic of the lotus flower, yeah, it grows in muddy water, but the lotus itself is pure, clean. It always is. You splash muddy water on the lotus, no time at all, you come back, lotus is clean again. The ancients recognized this, and so the lotus came to be symbolic of something that is pure, clean, not defiled by, certainly by other things, corruption or confusion, ignorance. So it took on, and we now know today, too, physicists have discovered that, and it's true that the lotus flower, I don't know about the ones that we have here in northern Minnesota, we call lotus, but the ones in India, they have a surface that the physicists have studied this, and just from its physical properties, nothing will stick to it, nothing. So this just recently discovered in the last, I don't know, I read about it anyway in Science News some years back now. But this is a real factor. But it gave them this beautiful image that even though it's all muddy and disturbed and agitated, still we can persist here with purity, as everything in its true nature is. And it's a matter of just realizing that, seeing that, not having the idea of it, living as though this were true or something like that, but it's a matter of actually seeing this, awakening to this, realizing this. This is available to us all. I'll just say, so in this world of emptiness, may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus. So no matter what is being disturbed and agitated and dirtied and sullied around you, even if it splashes on you, just come back to what it is that the awakened here are pointing to. And you can see, yes, that we are in this world of emptiness, except we can also remember Sen Sang when he said, no inside, no outside, no in between. And no outside, I mean, there's not some other place that is pure that maybe we can go to eventually, If we live a pure life here, maybe we can go there eventually or something. All the thoughts and ideas we get about stuff like this, or the idea, no, there's no such place, whatever we think. My teacher used to say, whatever you think, it's delusion. Yeah, whatever you put together about this is delusion. Maybe one more point I should make here. I could have gone through the whole verse here, but you can really do this with it's a good test to see if this is likely to be true dharma when you're reading it. If it's selling you something, grasp this or that, be wary. Because it really isn't handing you anything. It's kind of speaking, the awakened speaking to the awakened, but speaking as the awakened would speak without doing violence to the reality that's being lived out. So this is another important point I just wanted to make here, that in the end with Dharma teaching, there's really nothing to take away. It's just a matter of waking up and seeing. It isn't like, so I should work hard to get over to this other world, or is there some aspect of that other world in this muddy world that I should find? Because one of the questions directly asked about something like that. And no. First of all, you're solidifying, you're reifying these worlds. This is a way of talking, a way of pointing something out. Well, what's being pointed out? Well, you can't grasp it. I don't grasp it either. The awakened don't grasp it. But it's a matter of just realizing the nature of this world. Is it this world or that world? Well, there isn't this or that world. Well, another point, this person actually, the one I was more focused on than the others, I guess, as in my remarks today, I think his questions were coming from after having read my book, The Grand Illusion. I don't know, some of you have probably read that, but it doesn't really matter. But the point I was making in that book, I regret, I thought of it afterward, I should have had this statement boxed off and in bold print or something to make it jump off the page. But the salient point here, and it's something that you should never lose sight of, just kind of remind yourself of, it might not make sense at first until you see it. But we talk about this world and then this other world of what? Purity, you know, the world of wholeness. We talk about the two truths, you know, the little truth here and the big D truth there, and reality or whatever. But the point I make toward the end of the book there is that these are not two. And don't just, oh, they're not two, okay. They're not one. They're not two. This is the nature of reality. It's no more baffling or, well, like impossible to see than something like the Mandelbrot set, where you have this thing that clearly seems to have an inside and an outside, and yet you can't find it, the inside and the outside. You can't find the boundary between them. So if there's no boundary between them, then are they one? You know, and it's like trying to answer this. No, you can't say they're one exactly. It certainly appears to be two. So there are two. No, you can't say. This is what you have to, if you can finally realize this about what you're experiencing all the time, everywhere, with everything and everybody, it'll certainly keep you from the mental illness that we suffer from now politically with just this insane world that we've created for ourselves, with our current day politics and stuff. But also what we do with the environment. And yes, you can make a lot of money by exploiting this and pulling all of this from the ground and that sort of thing, but the environmental impact is unbearable. And it goes on and on, what we could point to with this. If we realize that these are not two worlds, and yet at the same time, they're not exactly one, because we can carry on as if they were two. But because they are not two, we get into all kinds of trouble. We get into the full trouble that we have as human beings, even enough to quite possibly drive us to our own extinction, let alone all the sorrow and pain and confusion that we find in our own personal lives. So this is to understand then that these are not two, these are not one, these are not two. To see that, and it is a matter of seeing it. It's not a matter of getting an idea about it. I can't imagine, if I try to conjure up an idea of this, well, I've searched it enough, believe me. There'll be nothing that'll hold up there. It's not an idea. It's a matter of realizing that this is the nature of what's going on here. It's a matter of either we see this and we can learn to live out of it, or we do not see it and suffer all the pains and agonies that we otherwise do as intelligent creatures living on this planet. Well, I certainly probably have talked long enough as it is, but are there any questions about anything I said today? Yes, Matt, yeah, hi.
The whole just dualism lately in life has really been at the forefront of I'm going to take a bit, but I'll try to make it succinct. But just the whole dualistic thinking, like this is a good thing, this is a bad thing, you know, that happened to me, this is favorable for me, this is going to be unfavorable. That whole way of seeing things has really been blown apart to me lately in a good way. But it's funny because I really have a thing with obsessive thinking. When something comes along and bothers me much, I tend to obsess about it. And I've definitely had, you know, really actually difficult things happen to me in life before, you know, real actual trouble. This thing lately has been all Facebook related. So I gotta admit, like, I've had kind of a mission lately, getting on Facebook for the last while to, you know, try to turn people on to Buddhism with, you know, Buddhist flavored poetry and music videos and songs and everything, and it all really backfired on me horribly, and I took offense to things a few times lately and acted out of that upset, you know, acted out of that anger lately, and it just really, really blew up in my face, and somehow deleted Facebook and waiting for the month, you know, the 30-day process where it will just be, you know, deleted for me and everything. But, so right now it really sucks for me, you know, just being so concerned with Facebook, because actually, out of all the real, actual, true problems in my life, you know, real, actual, you know, difficulties and things that I'm concerned with, the one thing that's been bothering me the most and troubling me the most is Facebook, which is just ridiculous. But it's really gotten me to show this, or learn that this, you know, it seemed like a bad thing, but I know this is actually going to be a blessing in disguise. It's going to be, with the absence of Facebook probably for the rest of my life, I see it's already settling my mind. I'm able to have a more quiet mind, just, you know, like to not have it be part of my life the last couple of weeks, and seeing how this already is this seemingly unfavorable bad thing in my life, you know, it's actually going to turn out to be wonderful.
Well, there you go. You see, you're tasting the wisdom of the wise Chinese farmer. You know that story.
Right.
Yeah. So who can say what's good or bad? And, you know, there's also, I would say, just watch yourself. A couple of things there. You said you were trying to bring Buddhism to people and that sort of thing. I wouldn't do that with the intent of, you know, trying to offer them something that would maybe make them more peaceful and have a better understanding or whatever. In spite of the fact that I was the head teacher here, but I'm a teacher here at Dharma Field, and this actually kind of grew out of my living room and that, but I never intended to start a place, you know. It was just that people were coming together, and eventually it turned into where we actually had a place like this. I was actually working on a career in writing, but that was my focus when all of a sudden there was just people showing up, so I needed to respond to that. So if you can respond to the need, if somebody asks you something or whatever and you can help, something you can point out, sure, that's fine. But to go with the idea that I'm gonna straighten this person out or whatever, or to create something here that people will flock to, I wouldn't pursue that very far. And the other thing too is, which I think you're beginning to observe more and more, Matt, and that is to just notice how you keep bringing yourself into the picture, and that's going to always lead to frustration and anger and disappointment and things of this sort. We can actually live out our lives with giving very little consideration to me. You're going to be looking out for yourself anyway, you know. So, but to dwell on it and to all of that makes life a little difficult. So just look out there and see what you can do in response to the world of appearances. And always, if you can, just keep your mind on wholeness. That's all that's really necessary. So I don't know, did that help at all, Matt?
Yeah, it definitely yeah. did. Kind of learn things the hard way. And, yeah.
Well, yes, that's a good teacher, the hard way, yeah. Anyone else? Anybody in Zoom land there? Yes.
Thank you. One day I left the Catholic Church a few years ago and I asked them, what's next? And a voice said to me, Zen came to me in the car. So I came here, I studied for maybe 6 years, and I thought, well, I'd like to see what my background was about. So I went back to explore the Roman Catholic Church, and I found that wasn't bad either. I don't know where the guilt evaporated to, but I haven't encountered any of that.
Well, that's wonderful, yeah.
Yes, so I'm very grateful to my parents. So much of what you said today makes me realize how my parents innately understood Zen, mm-hmm. and how they raised us, and how they've made it so easy for us to see maybe what is real, what is unreal, but to decipher yeah. for ourselves. And so I'm grateful to my parents
yes.
and to my teachers.
Yeah, I think too, as more and more we open up, that space gets filled with gratitude more and more. And it's easier to live out of gratitude and appreciate the various things that we might not have paid attention to earlier, you know, in life or whatever, that have really been great lessons for us as well. Yeah, not just the hard stuff, but also wonderful things too, particularly in later years where we begin to realize the interconnectedness of, the apparent interconnectedness of everything, you know. So there's much there, you know. In my old age here now, I'm appreciating that more and more too, just kind of the various things that I experienced as a young person. Didn't fully appreciate it at the time, but have been very good teachers in my past that have helped me a lot. Not just necessarily people, but circumstances and other things as well. So yeah, there's, you know, I'm glad you found that and realized that. Anyone else?
Yes, Frank has a question.
Frank, yes, hi Frank. I want to get back to you, Frank. You're in my mind.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
When you said, you have been emailing about these questions, my question came to mind. So, but I just wanted to make a comment. Seems like the muddy water is also a illusion. It's as pure as the lotus.
Mm-hmm. That's right, yeah. Yeah, all of the world of appearances is it's illusory. But it isn't nothing, because things don't have the substance we otherwise naively grant to them. If they did, quite literally, I won't get into this too much, but nothing would be happening. There wouldn't even be consciousness. So the world just simply isn't that way. It is all empty of any kind of substantiality, but that is the world that we have. That's the very vitality and vibrancy of the world itself is because it isn't something particular that's persisting in time. It's just this constant unfolding.
I think there's some Western science schools now that's also saying that consciousness is the fundamental reality
Yeah, I've been noticing. Yeah, I have noticed that, and it's very good. I'm glad to see it. Though there's a tendency to turn consciousness then into something, and then also to start telling a tale as to, you know, how it comes about, and that sort of thing. That's all wrong. That will go nowhere. But they'll have to find that out on their own. Thank you, Frank. I'll get back to you sooner or later. Just be patient. There's probably a number of you out there who might be waiting for me to respond, but I've been overwhelmed with things lately. But I'll get back to you. I've had you in mind anyway. Well, thank you. I'm getting there. Anything else? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.